Good morning, good morning. Great day, everyone. So I don't know about you, but I see a bit of chaos everywhere I look. It doesn't matter. It's at home, at work, it's on the news, pretty much everywhere you can find a bit of chaos and craziness happening in the world. In my conversations that I have with leaders, we often begin with the inevitability of that chaos because it just is, right? It's going to happen. And then we begin to move to the freedom that exists when you are able to choose inner peace. But the big question is, how do you get there from here? I'm super excited today because we're gonna talk to our special guest, Nicholas Clay, and we're gonna ask him just that. Are you ready? I'm ready. Let's get ready to lead above the grind. Great day, everyone. Is it cool to dance to your own song? I love that song.
I love that intro. That's such a cool intro. I want to know the track in the back of it.
Yeah. That's awesome. Great day, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us and tuning in. And just in case you missed it, there is always a little bit of humor at the end of every intro. And if you missed that last one, I really like this one. So let me just put it up here for you in case you missed it. Coffee is vital for survival. Dinosaurs didn't have coffee, and look how that turned out, right? I totally agree. So welcome everyone to another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. We are your cup full of inspiration, revelation, and wit for today's savvy leader. Super excited to be joining you on our new day and time on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern. Before we get started, a couple of things. If you have not subscribed to our YouTube channel, you can go to coffeewithrhondashow.com and click the little subscribe button. And whether you're watching live or on the replay, stop right now, hit the like button on the video and share it. I promise you, there will be something in this conversation today that someone else will want to hear, and they will thank you for sharing it with them. So are you ready to get started? With all that being said, my name is Rhonda Y. Williams, and I'm your host for the show. I am what I call an RSOL, or a recovering stressed out leader. There were days where I felt like I was pulling out my hair, doing the work, put on the grind. But today, I believe that we absolutely must find a more modernized approach to leading so that we are able to live, lead, and love at very high levels in all aspects of our lives. So you can learn more about the work that I do in the world at atgleadership.com. Today, I have my cup. I have my little standard cup here, and I've just got some basic boring coffee, right? Nothing too special in my cup. So that's what's happening with me. So let's get to our co-host, Marae. Marae, good evening to you.
Good morning, and it's evening on my side and getting quite late. So I'm happy to be here. And you know me, I'm the greatness engineer. And I have greatness and step into this greatness. And I focus my, you know, my work on women in a male dominated environment. I'm an engineer by background, by the way, and you probably know it. And I'm the founder of MT Energy Resources, and I do a lot of other things. But today I'm happy to be awake, and I have water today. So I'm not, you know, no coffee, water, and I'm going to be awake. Don't worry about it. So welcome, everyone.
Awesome. Thank you, Marae. Water, good old water is always good. Just a little secret, I do need to drink more water. So you're always a reminder for me. So that's awesome. And then we have our special guest joining us today. I'm super excited to have our guest joining us, Nicholas Clay. Nicholas has been on his own personal journey and has healed hurtful triggers and released stored negative energy that used to cause uncomfortable lows. Today, he is a mindfulness practitioner and coach, and I'm really excited. I spoke with Nicholas and just got all excited and thought, you've got to be on the show. So Nicholas, welcome to the coffee table. We're so happy to have you here. Tell us just a little bit about what the work that you do in the world, and then tell us what you have in your cup.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rhonda. So the work I do in the world, in short, is teaching people how to process negative energy and how to relieve it from the system. We live in a world with a lot of coping strategies or, you know, medication. And so this approach is teaching people how to actually remove it indefinitely. And one of the ways you can test that is from having a trigger or having an experience that used to trigger you and being in that experience once more and seeing it gone. And that shows the power of this work. So it's not just about the practice of mindfulness. My coaching goes a little deeper to teach people what's actually causing the effects that's pulling us out of present in the first place. So that's, I guess that's a practical way I can share. And then what's in my cup is, I have coffee with caramel macchiato creamer. So that's what's in my cup today, or just about every morning.
Awesome. I love that. It's one of my favorite kinds of creamers, caramel macchiato. It's also the only thing I typically order when I go to Starbucks, because everything else feels too complicated for me. It feels overwhelming. So I'm like, just stick with what you know. Just do caramel macchiato. That's fast and easy. So, and I see Roz is joining us. Looks like she might be working. Hey, Ms. Roz, let me get you on screen here, darling. Hey, lady. All right. So she's going to be in the background doing her thing. She'll pop in and out and join us as she can. One of the things I love about this show is we are women on the go and on the move, right? We do our thing wherever we are. So, Nicholas, I want to get started. And I want to start with your opening quote today, because your opening quote, the one that I used is the one from Albert Einstein, but I want to talk about that because I was sort of processing the connection between it and the mindfulness work. So let me get this up on the screen for us, our opening quote for today. So I'll read it for those of you watching on replay or either listening on audible form later or on audio form. It says, no problem can be solved from the same level of consciousness that created it. And it's a quote by Albert Einstein. And then it's got the wonderful, amazing, smiling picture of Nicholas on it, just in case you can't see it. And so, Nicholas, tell us a little bit about why this quote and how that connects to what you just shared with us in the work that you do.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes. So another foundation, a big part of my coaching is on the levels of consciousness. And so this is not something that we see a lot in our world. And everyone I work with, every time I show this map, I haven't had a single person who's seen it already. And what this map shows is there's 17 different states of consciousness. And I consider the middle courage, I call that the bridge. And it takes courage to get from the lower mind to the higher mind. And what that quote, what you can take from that is, if we look at, let's just look in the world, a lot of things we try to solve, we think there's a system issue and we try to make better systems and improve our systems. We don't realize that these systems are coming from a certain state of mind, a state of consciousness. Okay, so if you build a system from a state of anger, and you try to correct that by building another system from a state of anger, you're just going to keep getting the same systems that are possible from that state of mind. And that's one of the lower states. Or another one that's prevalent in our world is fear. Right? Most people are operating with a constant state of fear. We can see that by just the rise in stats of how many people are experiencing anxiety, which is a form of fear, which is a form of worry that gets unaddressed. And so if you keep creating systems out of fear, you're just going to keep getting similar systems with different perspectives. They're just going to look different. They're coming from the same state of judgment and low awareness. Now, on the higher end, on the higher mind, there's a state of acceptance. And that's a higher state of awareness, a higher state of consciousness, a higher vibrational frequency. And so now if you're thinking from a state of acceptance, you're going to get systems that would not present themselves from a state of fear or a state of anger. And this is where that quote is referring to. You're not going to solve a problem coming from the same state in which created it. You're just going to get a different version of the same problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's deep.
Very deep.
That's very deep. And I feel like Roz just looked into the camera. She's like, yep, that's deep. Okay, let's pause for a minute and just unpack that a little bit, Nicholas, because honestly, we could do a whole show on these seven levels of consciousness that we talked about, right? So when I hear what you're saying, what I hear is, we wonder why the same things keep showing up in our lives. It's a reflection of the systems that are a reflection of the level of consciousness that we're operating from. Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very good capture. And I'll add that there's also a, and I'll say this in light as I can, there also is a runaway abundance of trauma in our society. And trauma cycles from one generation to the next. And because we, most of the time, we don't see it, so it passes unconsciously. And what's a fascinating aspect of ourselves and as humans, we will keep drawing in what traumatizes us until we have power of it. This is why we stay in cycles. This is why people have a cyclic relationship trouble where they're like, why do I keep getting the same person? Because you're actually attracting a trauma that's unhealed. And so this is called trauma bonding. Most of our relationships are bonded through a deeper trauma that we just don't see. So that's another, you know, kind of coming back lighter on, you know, why do we keep seeing the same things in the world? Because we're not healed. So we're good. Mm-hmm. It's going to, if there's one big thing I can offer, right? Regardless if you choose a path of healing or not, you think you have issues, you don't, whatever you want to practice, I can guarantee you that stored negative energy in our system does not go anywhere if we do not healthfully process it. It just gets pushed down and pushed down. And even people with severe trauma pushed to our unconscious mind, so we don't even see it anymore. We can forget all about it. It is still there. It still operates. It affects how we're being with others and with ourselves. There's no shortcut to processing it from the system. You either hold on to it, which Eckhart Tolle explains as the pain body, or you release it. That's it. That's how it works.
Holy cow. All right.
I know that was a whole other show.
Holy cow, that we may not get anywhere else. We may not get beyond this. I've been doing a lot lately with staying in the moment, in the conversation, toss your notes to the side, whatever, right? This is deep and it's important. So Ray, jump in here. For, I don't know about you, but
yeah, it's quite powerful, but you know, I'm going to put my art of a scientist here. You know, when we work as scientists, when you have the same energy, you actually don't attract each of us. It's the opposite. So if you have someone with the same energy, like, you know, he was saying, it's just going to be the same and you can't blend it. You can't change anything. It's the same. But if you have, you know, an opposite, then you can change something. So scientifically, it makes sense. You know, it's like, you know, if you are in a very negative environment, and you bring more negative people, nothing is going to change because you keep, you know, making the same, creating the same energy, and you can't change anything. The particle or anything that we do in science cannot change. But, you know, if you bring something different, then you can create something that can, you know, work and blend and really, you know, create something new. So that's actually really good, you know, in terms of looking at it from a science point of view.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. You guys are blowing my mind this morning. So we've got a Nicholas perspective. Now we've added the science version. I don't ever do this, but
wow.
I never use this little wow button on the show, but I will tell you, this is a first. It is absolutely deserving. Roz, did you want to jump in?
Oh my God. Does this tie into the same opposites attract? And the reason why opposites have to attract is because of the energy. They have different energies.
Interesting.
I guess that's what fell in my mind.
Exactly. In science, that's proven.
Huh. All right. So, wow. So, Nicholas, did you want to add anything to what Murray added in terms of the different energies? How does that sit with you?
Yeah. So I would like to, Murray, I wanted to ask you, would you also see this explaining why in a world where if you're someone who's a giver and then you have another person who's so a taker, this is where these relationships can develop. And this is where if you have someone coming that has a lot of love to give, and yet another person has a lot of hurt to receive that, this is where you can find yourself, it actually can become an unhealthy codependent relationship. Murray, would you say that also talks to that?
Yeah, that talks to that. That's exactly what it is, you know, when we look at it from a scientific point of view and at a very, you know, small level, particle, everything that, you know, that makes us, you know, it's all about that.
Wow. That is really powerful. Nicholas, we don't know about these seven levels of consciousness, right? No one teaches us about these levels. So we don't even know that we can transverse these different levels. But what you're saying is that absolutely, if you're finding yourself attracting from that lower, from those lower levels of consciousness, then you can use some systems, structures, processes, techniques, whatever they might be, to begin climbing that ladder to get to other levels. Is that accurate?
Yeah, one correction. There's 17 different states, lower, 17. Eight higher, and then courage is the bridge. Shame is the lowest state of mind, and enlightenment being the highest. And so that's a fluctuation of awareness. And so a shift up towards the higher levels of consciousness is a shift towards understanding and being aware. And a shift down is a shift towards judgment. So shame being the highest form of judgment. And then there's also an ego component. So our sense of self, the importance of self drastically increases as we shift down. So if you're in a state of shame, essentially it's the you and the world, like the world's against you, and the world becomes very small. Your perspective gets very narrow and contracted. And as we move up in consciousness, enlightenment is objective observation. So being aware, void of judgment. And so one of the ways I think this comes from Buddhists will say it in this way, it's an experiencing an ego death. To get to a place where there is no I, it's a place of we, a place of us, which comes with inherent challenges to bring the psyche to that state. I'll offer though that it is a quite euphoric
experience. No. That's really good. So we just dived in and start talking. I forgot to say good morning to Mom. Hey, Mom. Thanks for tuning in. She's here with Organic Concord Grape Cocktail with fresh lemons in her cup. Looking forward to another great show. Andy's out there. Andy said that this is all excellent. Andy, tell us where you are. Your name doesn't look familiar to me. So tell me where you are in the world. And then if you can share what's in your cup, that would be fantastic. If you're out there, don't forget to share what where you are and what's in your cup. So it's really interesting to me as we talk through this that we really do, the conditioning in us is fear, judgment, right? And all of this, which is that why they say when you become mindful that you've got to release judgment of what's happening around you. Right. And so that you can get to that place. So, all right. So my brain is going a mile a minute here. I think what I want to do is I want to take a quick break and I'm going to do our caregiver chronicles. And then once we do that, we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more. And I want Nicholas to tell us what the heck mindfulness even is. Right. People are like, is it a religion? Is it meditation? Like, what is mindfulness? So, Nicholas, when we come back from our short break, if you would break that all down for us, I think that would be fantastic.
You finally got the caregiving portion of taking care of your loved one under control. Now it's time to move them, honey. So what are some of the things that we need to keep in mind when it's time to move? Hi, I'm Ross Jones with a new episode of the Caregiver Car Chronicles. As you see, we are moving, and I wanted to talk a little bit about what is it that you need to make sure of when you are moving your loved one. Number one, you got to remember the emotional part of the moving. You got to remember the emotional part, and you have to let them talk about the emotions. Number two, you got to take it slow. Let's take one room at a time and pack it. If you're not on a major deadline, then, you know, make the, you know, take those small steps. Number three, make sure that they are involved in the process. This is so important. If you take over, then it's going to be a reluctant move. But if they're part of the process, it'll be a lot smoother. And then also maintain a routine for them as they are moving.
Wow. So that I know hits home for a lot of people, because as you age, there's some type of movement often happening, right? You are downsizing, you're moving in with loved ones or family members, you're moving into senior communities. There's a lot that happens. Roz, I love how you pointed out the fact that we have to go slow and give people time to process their emotions. You know, we come in and we're like, oh, this stuff, and just get rid of this and move this over here. But this is something that has an emotional attachment. So thank you for that. I love that Car Chronicles. Really, really a good one. Okay, so Nicholas, I don't know about anybody else, but I hear lots of things when it comes to mindfulness and meditation and religion and all this stuff all conglomerated together. What is mindfulness?
Yeah, simply put, mindfulness is presence. It's being here in the now completely with our full focus. And you talked about internal states. It's in being introspective, noticing what's there for you, understanding what's there for you, not placing a judgment on it. And that is the simplest way that I can share of what mindfulness is.
What happens when we do place the judgment on it? And how does that impact mindfulness? Can I be mindful and judgy at the same time?
That's a really good question. I'm not going to pretend to know that answer at this point. I haven't thought about that. If you can be mindful of judgment, I would say that they're opposites. Because the inherently placing a judgment on something clouds the nature of reality. So we go back to enlightenment, that pure state of awareness. This is where we're born as infants. There's no language. We haven't developed that sense of communication yet. And we can learn any language we're exposed to. And when we look out into the world, we're merely being aware. That's that pure state. And one of the examples I give about meditation, or like a walking meditation, is being able to look at a tree without calling it a tree. So just giving that property to it is a judgment. See, humans created that name tree. The objective reality of itself is not inherently a tree. That's something we created in communication to translate information from a thing to another person. So if we're judging ourselves, We're technically not being present. We're not being completely aware of what is. We're putting a context to it, which is how we build mental structures to understand the world. And it's just part of our communication.
Wow. So, Roz, I don't know about you, but I sometimes find it difficult. And then Andy said that judgment is usually a negative, right? So we're not usually applying these nice, warm, fluffy, you know, ways of thinking about it. It's usually a negative. So thank you for that, Andy. Roz, I don't know about you, but I find that sometimes it, because of the speed of the world and everything happening around me, and our desire to multitask and do everything, I find it sometimes difficult to be present and to be mindful. Roz, tell us a little bit about how that shows up in your world.
A lot of times for us as caregivers, presence is a priority. Presence is a priority because a lot of times when people are growing older, they're isolated or they make themselves isolated is because they don't want to be a burden to other people, or most of their friends and family have died off. So they've gone into some type of isolation. And so people forget about them. So my my part in their life is the present, the now. And so that makes a big difference for them. So for us, presence is huge. The now is huge. And so it makes a difference. It makes a huge difference to presence, as Nicholas was saying. So for us, the presence helps expand the quality of life. When they have someone that they know that's going to come in every day or every 2 or 3 days, whatever, they have something to look forward to. And a lot of times when you don't have that presence, it can lead to other things. So I've seen it lead to depression, isolation, anxiety, suicide thoughts. So that's how important presence is.
Well, Roz, what's interesting to me about that, so I'm a registered nurse by background and so been in healthcare for many, many years. What's interesting to me is with the critical nature of presence, particularly in the healthcare space and the caregiving space, they actually teach us to multitask.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They teach it. Like, I've got to be in here talking to you. I've got to be entering this stuff in the computer. I've got to be assessing what's happening over here. Right. So they actually teach you to multitask when the essence of that humanity, as we're talking about, is just being present. So, Murray, what about you? How does this show up in your world?
It is quite interesting to, you know, to listen to all the point of view. But as you know, for us, you know, scientists, when you are a scientist or an engineer, you actually have to be focused. So your presence, you have to be present, because you can imagine if you're not present, you know, if you make a mistake, and sometimes, you know, the mistake that we make can actually be deadly. So we have to really be mindful of being present, being focused, understanding where we are, understanding our gaps, and really, you know, be present and understand where we are as well as an individual performing this task. But unfortunately, with everything that is happening, you mentioned it, Rhonda, we are asked now to multitask a little bit more, and we use this, being present, this mindfulness and understanding how to put things together and being focused on one thing and really, you know, putting our energy into the most important thing that we are doing. And we see that, and especially on the operational side, when we lose, you know, focus, I mean, you can have an explosion, especially on a rig, or you can have, you know, serious injuries. And in those industries, it can be fatal. So the presence is really, really important.
Oh, man. I love that. So you see how this is what I love about the show, right, Nicholas, is everybody's got a slightly different perspective and a really unique viewpoint on this. Like, I had no idea where that was going for either of them, right? So it's really, really great to do that. And I want to ask you about, with everything happening around us, one of the things that we talked about in terms of this show is peace that can come, an inner peace that can come from being mindful. And talk to us about why is that? Why is mindfulness the key to inner peace for us?
Yeah, because there's no problems in the present. Problems that arise in the mind and in thought. If we have full acceptance of what is and we're here, then there's no disturbance. We get disturbed when we leave our present state.
So we get disturbed when we leave our present state.
Whoa,
so either,
whoa.
Right, Marie. All right, Marie, you take it from here. What was that whoa for?
That whoa is just, you know, it's amazing because, you know, when I listen to it, we just really, I mean, if I understand it correctly, we create our own problems, so we can actually also not create them. We have this power. And that's really why I'm saying, wow, is that, you know, we unconsciously go into creating those problems in our mind, and it creates all kind of negative emotion, the fear, the, you know, trying to protect ourselves when there is actually no danger. And yet we also have the power to say, you know what? I mean, it is not a problem. And this shift, you know, looks easy when, you know, Nicholas talk about it, but we have a lot of problem to actually do, you know, go and do this shift actually.
Yeah.
And I think we're traumatized. We're basically traumatized without knowing it.
Yeah, consider problem as a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes back to perspective, how we view things. It could be an opportunity. We put such a judgment, and I won't go too deep into this, even in the aspects of life. We have this resistance towards the full nature of life, and the biggest resistance is towards death. And so if we're not able to accept death, then in the same breath, we're not accepting life. We look at that as a problem. That's not a problem, it's an experience. And we fundamentally have a fear of the unknown.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we can accept that aspect of everything we know, we don't know, and even what we have an unknown of, that's taking in all of reality, accepting there's things that we don't know and we may never know, and accepting, which goes a little deeper, is there's also a field of what we don't know. And that also operates in our mind as well. And this is, you know, gets into a bit of my coaching as well, of what I help people realize is there. Look at it as a blind spot. You know, when we're driving in our vehicles, right, we have a blind spot. Our newer vehicles have an indicator light to tell us there's something there. 10 years ago, we didn't have that though. So we also have that in our brain. So, and you know, when I ask people, what would the world look like? What would the country look like if everybody driving a vehicle was unaware that they had a blind spot in their car? Well, everyone tells me unanimously, there'd probably be a lot more accidents. There'd be trouble. I mean, even before we had indicator lights, we would find out about it by either getting into an accident. Oh, I didn't see that car there. Or almost getting into an accident. Oh, where did that car come from? Well, that's also how the human brain operates. 8 billion people on this world, and maybe 5% of them are aware that there's a blind spot, because this level of understanding and coaching is not common. Yet, every single human is walking around with a blind spot, and few of us actually realize that. And so hence, our accidents are in terms of problems, failed relationships, stress, anxiety, depression. It's all, a lot of that's in our blind spot.
Has great application to last week's show with Susan Schmidt Winchester, who, remember the cover of her book, ladies, was the bumper cars, right? Mm-hmm. And it's this very same thing that Nicholas is talking about. I love the thought about, we are unaware of our blind spots, and therefore we're having these crashes in our lives. So let me get Andy's comment in here. He says, we look backwards too much and forward equally as problematic. Thus, we miss the passing day, and that's very difficult to correct. That is so true, right? Nicholas, would you say that someone might say, not me, but someone might say, might say that, well, these are problems, right? These problems are real. My mm-hmm. mortgage is due, and I don't have the money to pay it. And you're talking about stay in the moment. How would you respond to people who are saying that all of this stuff is real?
Yeah. One, I really like Andy. I don't know if we're connected. He looks familiar. If not, I want to. And two, the only thing that is ever real is the present moment. We're never going to change the past, and we're never going to touch the future. Mortgage being due, you can say that's a problem. That's one way to look at it. Or you can look at it as it's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because being worried about the mortgage being due doesn't change the mortgage being due. It merely constrains the thought process. And so we create these self-fulfilled prophecies of the mortgage is due. We have a thought out of worry, and then it becomes fulfilled. And we miss the blind spot of opportunity of what could arise by opening our mind to opportunity and discovering ways that we could increase our income to get the mortgage due. I'll just give a silly example, because now I'm getting, you know, more into just a arbitrary, you know, scenario. You know, mortgage is being due. Well, you can be stuck in that state, and then you miss the mortgage payment, or you can open the mind one day, look at a couch that you never use and say, huh, I wonder how much I can get for that. Oh, that's $1,000 couch. I can sell that for $700, and that would pay my mortgage. And again, you know, that's a just an arbitrary example, yet there are real opportunities that will arise from that. Or maybe it's taking a look at, is your mortgage, is this problematic every month? Well, maybe you're in a home that is causing more constraint than value. Maybe there's an opportunity where this isn't the house for you. And maybe we're doing it just because we have to keep up with what we think society is telling us success is.
That's really, really good. And Regina's joined. She said, hello, Regina from San Antonio. I have coffee in her cup, multitasking today, but I'm enjoying this amazing topic. Welcome, Nicholas. Thank you, Regina, for joining. No, this is really good, Marae.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on that because and really stress out sometimes that is a matter of perspective. And I just had the opportunity to, you know, sometime to go to the village and where people have really what we call have nothing. And you go there, you don't feel the stress. People are just going around. They have a lot of limitation from our perspective, but they're so happy. And you come with your stress because you think about your mortgage, you think about what you have to pay, you think about, and you realize that at the end of the day, the happiest person is actually the person that you pity, and that's really, you know, what it's all about. And I really, you know, appreciate what we're talking about today, because sometimes we just create a problem ourselves. We constrain ourselves and we become miserable and try to and now create this negative energy around us that we can actually free ourselves from. So really, really, you know, really good. I really like, you know, what we're talking about today.
Yeah, really important conversation, I think, because particularly, Nicholas, the point about our worry, and we were choosing to worry. So I use examples from my own life and people that I know that worry and worry and worry. And then it's really a choice, right? It's not changing anything. That worry is not changing anything. And in fact, it's probably making worse your health and everything else, but yet that's your choice. It's a situation that sure you need to deal with it, but the anxious worrying doesn't really help fix it.
Yeah, I can. Two things I'd like to add. One, because we've said multitasking quite a bit, and I want to bounce this off of Marae from my understanding and see what your thoughts are. From my understanding, that literally multitasking is actually not something a human mind is capable of. What happens is the mind rapidly switches back and forth between tasks, and so in those switches, we're missing frames of each piece. So our full focus is not on that, which is what actually diminishes the quality of our work, and it becomes less efficient.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because because at the end of the day, it's all about your energy. So if you focus your energy on one thing, you give it more power, and scientifically, it's also proven. But if you start to scatter the energy, so you're playing in a larger plan, and obviously each, you know, part of the task are just getting a portion of that energy, and you can't complete it fully. So it's important that you focus on one thing, put the full energy, and then you can grow and or complete that task or whatever you want to do. But if you spread it, then you lose that energy, and it's difficult to actually complete any of them sometimes. So it is important to know that about multitasking.
Okay, it's
really interesting, Nicholas. Let me add to this. I've been teaching mindfulness in the healthcare space for probably 10 years now. And one of the things that we teach them is that the term multitasking was actually developed for computers. Right? Computers and software and programming. But even then, the computer is really rapid switching. And so what our brains are doing is really a rapid task switching back and forth and back and forth. And Nicholas, as you said, what happens when you switch? What happens when you're over here doing this? Well, you kind of miss what's over here doing this. Great illustration. I bet everybody can relate to this. What do you do when you're on the phone with someone? You start multitasking. You're cooking, you're vacuuming the floor, you're doing some housekeeping. And what happens? You miss part of the conversation. Notice how many times you say, can you say that again? Or what was that? Or I didn't quite catch that. That's your clue that you're multitasking and you're not paying attention. And in fact, what we like to say and when we teach it is the definition of multitasking is messing up two things at once.
I like that. And if I may,
I love the analogy of the computer.
Yeah.
I love the analogy with the computer because the computer, it's the same. You know, if you ask the computer to do a complete task, it's going to take more time than just, you know, doing one thing, doing something simple. So it's the same, you know, it's just that sometimes we just don't understand, you know.
Let me, Nicholas, I want to let you come in, but let me first let Regina off the hook. Regina, this is about you, poor thing. She said she was multitasking and all of a sudden we're on a whole rabbit trail. This isn't about you, but it is key to mindfulness, right? It is really relevant to this conversation we had. Nicholas, go ahead.
Yeah. So now coming back to Mireille, what you were saying about energy. Right? Mm-hmm. And how it gets scattered and focused. Okay, so now let's look at the foundation of reality in us. Everything foundationally is energy, is vibration. And so our thoughts are also energy. And so thinking not only distorts reality, it removes us from the present. So we go back to mindfulness where, and you said, you talked about the more you put energy in a single focus, there's power in that. Well, if you look at the state of consciousness in the map there, well, if you were to see the map of consciousness, you would see on the left side there or on the right, depending on what map you see, power starts to arise when we get into the areas of willingness, into acceptance, and creation arises at love and joy and peace. And so essentially, that is being able to focus our full energy on the present moment. And so that focus allows us to see 100% of what reality is, not what we think it to be.
Mm-hmm. Wow. No, that's good. That's really good.
Wow.
Right? Really, really good stuff. And so I want to, all right. So Nicholas, we know that it's important to be mindful. We know that there are many benefits of being in the present moment. And in fact, what I share with my clients is that your only true power is in the present moment. You don't have power anywhere else. You have no power about what happened in the past. You really can't predict or control what happens in the future. Your power leverage center is right now in this moment. So you, when we were prepping for the show, I said, so how do we get there, right? What's your formula? And I'll share with folks what we have for you. And you said that the pathway to inner peace is getting to nothing is how we get to everything. Please, oh wise one.
Tell me.
Break that down for us. What does that mean?
it means clearing the system. It's to get to enlightenment is to get to nothing, no thought. When we focus mindfulness meditation, it's to clear the mind. It's to get to us behind the thought. And so Eckhart Tolle explains this as the foundation of what we are is not thought. What we are is the awareness of thought, the awareness that's hearing, that's seeing, that's sensing thought. When we get to that awareness, that is getting to a pure energetic state, and then we're at nothing. And then from nothing, thought arises. From nothing, everything arises. That's getting to nothing. And until we can truly clean out the system, then we're holding on to something. It's when we let go and there's nothing left that we're holding on to, that we can fully embrace the essence of what we are, which is nothing, which gives a rise to everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right, Roz, let's talk. To you.
Good luck, Roz.
Take it away. Oh my goodness. This is fun.
Basically, what I'm hearing is some of this is caused by us. Mm-hmm. It's self-inflicted. It's, you know, so part of it is our own doing. However, we have the opportunity, he's saying there's 17 opportunities for us to do better. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm hearing. And then also too, every day We have the choice to set our vibration and our energy. We have the choice.
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. what we allow to come in, outside pressure, peer pressure, whatever the case may be, we have the option to say, no, I'm not going to allow this. No, it's not coming in. We have all those opportunities. And, you know, oftentimes when people say, oh, I'm overwhelmed, I'm so busy, my calendar is full. And I've talked about this before. We make our own calendars. So if mm-hmm. you have it back to back to back to back, then yeah, you know, like you said, we're multitasking, we're going to miss something. Our energy level, you know, we can't even catch up because we're going.
Yeah.
So if you have appointments back to back to back to back, instead of having an appointment at 9, another one at 11, so between 10 and 11, you can regroup and go on to that next meeting. So a lot of the stuff that's going on, again, I'm going to go back to what I said originally, is caused by us because we don't manage our time, we don't mm-hmm. manage our energy, and we don't manage our space. If I'm mm-hmm. correct, Nicholas, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm Ross Jones, and I'm done speaking.
Yeah. one thing I want to add, and I am doing my best to stay as light as I can here. Yeah.
Go deep, honey. Go deep. Just go deep.
Look, that's 14 minutes, right?
We're there yet anyway, so just...
Well, we've talked a bit about it's come up a bit that we have the choice. Well, I'm going to offer you that we have the option. And most people on this planet, we don't know what a choice is. See, most Ooh. Of us, we don't make choices. We make decisions. And we use those phrases interchangeably, and they are not one and the same. And how it functions.
All right. Wait. I'm out. Slow down for a minute because I need you on big picture. And I need you to back that up.
Yep.
And I need you to say that again because it is very powerful. Please repeat mm-hmm. that process about the option and the choice.
Yeah, we have, I get excited. We have options, and we think we're making a choice. We have options to select from, and how we process and coming from our intuition is what I would characterize making a choice, as opposed to coming from a thought process intellectually, which is where most of us will make decisions. And so because we have a conflation of those terms, most of us are making decisions, and most people never make a choice. They are not one and the same. And I'll go a step further. Our sense of self comes from our prefrontal cortex, right? In our brain. It's the last development of our human evolution, right? There's three main parts of the brain. There's our reptilian, fight or flight, emotional brain, and then our sense of self. Okay. So the left frontal cortex is our intellect. This is where we rationalize, analyze, make decisions. This is where we protect ourselves. We can cut ourselves off from our emotions. And then our right side, our prefrontal cortex, that sense of self is our introspective, is our self-awareness. This is why mindfulness and cognitive behavioral therapy is so effective, because the right self-awareness, introspective side is connected to our emotional brain, where our traumas and triggers are stored. Our intellect is not connected to our emotional brain. This is why just knowing a thing doesn't improve. This is why analyzing a problem internally doesn't improve. This is why going to counseling sessions and just talking about doesn't improve. We need to actually learn how to be with ourselves. There is no skipping around the processing experience. Yeah, it sucks sometimes. It really does. I've had more breakdowns at this point than I can count. It really is challenging. It is not for everyone. Yet it is the process in which we heal. This side, this is our protector, and this side is going to heal us. And understanding what a choice is a powerful breakthrough to actually start making them in life. And that reinstills a trust in self. We start making decisions because we lose trust in ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we defer our trust into our analytical mind, our intellect. And then we base all these reasons on this right way to do things. So that's what I would say about that.
that's really good. And it really aligns with Andy's comment here, where he says 100% There are many deep-rooted anxiety issues and childhood traumas, which is what you were just, so this was perfect, right? You really dovetailed nicely into this comment, and it says, we have to resist it, which can make the feelings persist. Different people have several remedies for this, and you are a very bright guy, he says to you, Nicholas. So thank you so much. This is really, I think, a powerful point for people to understand how they're operating and functioning in their life. And to, let me go back to judgment. To do so without judgment, awareness without judgment is incredibly powerful, right? In studies where we talk, we teach leaders and we talk about studies of self-aware leaders. Most leaders say, oh yes, I'm self-aware. I absolutely know who I am, how I'm showing up, what my team thinks, blah, blah, blah. Well, in the actual studies, it shows that only 9% of men leaders are actually self-aware, given the context of how they describe that. And only 16% of women leaders are self-aware. People, we are not self-aware. We're just not, right? And so knowing that and saying, oh my gosh, I'm not as self-aware as I thought I was. What does mm-hmm. that mean? It's an opportunity. It's an invitation to become more self-aware. So I love this conversation so much. I feel like there's so much in this for everyone. I want to talk about sort of this pathway that you talk about, that getting to nothing, right? Getting, releasing everything. Mm-hmm. Nicholas, we work our entire lives trying to get something, right? We are trying to get a title. We're trying to get homes, cars, respect. You know, we're trying to get all of this stuff. And then we talk to you and you say, get to nothing.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we're trying to get something because we think we're missing something that we already have.
Mm-hmm.
And, did you see Roz's reaction?
Yeah. And I really wanted to add something as well, is that, you know, like you said, we try to have so many things, we get attached to so many things. But at the end of the day, and if we look at, you know, death, you know, we're going with nothing. So why are we worrying? Because at the end of the day, we're building all of this. And then when we leave, it stayed behind. And I think that's, you know, something that I've always asked myself, why worry about, you know, getting the car, getting this and being stressed when I'm gone, everything is staying behind and it might actually be destroyed, because if nobody is taking care of it, it's going to go as well. So really,
can I offer? You
know. Really, thank you for that, Marae. Roz, did you want to jump in and add anything before we move into our wrap-up set? I can't believe it's been almost an hour already.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas messed me up with that last comment. I'm just like, I'm going to go back and listen to, I'm going to go all the way back to 10:45 and listen to that one comment. That's all I have to say.
I'd like to offer an insight on top of that.
Please do.
If we look at the most peaceful among us, which I would say are monks, and if there's a counter to that, I'm open. Think about why they release their material possessions and the peace that they experience. They don't walk around worried or regretting or, oh, like the fable, the monk who sold this Ferrari. You know, the monks aren't thinking about the Ferrari they used to have. See, it's. And I'll leave it with that. I'll let that sit.
All right. So, Regina said, I totally agree. There's no such thing as multitasking. I really actually like to focus on not doing it. And I generally like to make a decision to focus on one thing at a time. And I can definitely attest to that. Really love this topic. And I enjoy that I can also enjoy the replay. So yes, so she can learn from all of us and our comments and everything. No, that's fantastic. Let's do our coffee. There were a couple of things that we didn't do today. So let's, and I just, the conversation was too rich and I didn't want to take us off track with all those other little distractions. So we're really not going to worry about those things too much today. Mm-hmm. But I do want us to make sure that we get our coffee shot photo. Let's get that going before we forget. Roz. Great. Got it. Thank you. And And we're going to really start the wrap up here. So
wow.
The question is, and what we do with this segment is, what did we put in your cup today, right? We've had some really good conversations, really deep things for us to ponder, consider how it applies to our own lives. I think I need to go back and listen to this one as well, because as much as I love to sort of facilitate and do all of that, this is really a good conversation. And it has, I think it holds relevance to all of us every single day in our lives. So when we come back, we're going to come to our co-hosts and ask them to share with us what we put in their cup. And then Nicholas, we're also going to ask you to share any final thoughts that you want to share with the audience. And then we will also ask you to share how people can connect with you and learn more about the work that you do in the world. So we'll get started with our wrap-up segment right after this. All right. So if you're out there, you're watching and you have not liked or shared this video, didn't I tell you in the beginning that you would definitely want to do this, because there was something amazing that will be happening in this hour that others will want to hear. So if you have not done that yet, then please like and share the video with your feed. Your network will definitely want to tune into this. So let's go to our co-host, Ms. Roz Jones. Let's start with you. What did we put in your cup today?
Well, two things you put in my cup. I'm glad that we have a format, but we don't have a format. And we don't have to stick to it. And we put it according to who our guest is. Yeah, you know, we have a show open and a show close, but in Nicholas, with him and all the other guests, sometimes we have to adjust to make sure that our audience is receiving the information and it's impactful. What he has done for me is raised my awareness to a whole nother level. God knows I needed it for where I am right now. Yeah. Perfect timing. And also too, when he talked about the options versus choices, that right there has blown me away, and I'm going to take that immediately and use it for myself. I'm done speaking. Thank you, Nicholas.
You're welcome. Thank you, Roz.
Thank you so much, Roz. Ray, what's in your cup?
Oh, my cup is full. I'm happy I didn't put full water into my cup today, because it's now overflowing. So thank you, Nicholas. But like Roz, I think the awakening today was about, you know, understanding the option versus choices and really how it plays out into our life, and really focus on that too, you know, going forward, because as it was mentioned, you know, several times today, we tend to restrict ourselves. We get attached to, you know, whatever we have in our world, and it actually defines us instead of us actually defining and taking control of and creating, you know, what we want, and understanding that it's all about the energy as well that we bring, and the awareness and being present as well. So lots of things, and I'm gonna also watch the show again. I was present the whole time, but I need to watch it again. So
absolutely, thank you so much, Murray. Definitely. So Nicholas, tell us about what you would like people to walk away from this conversation. We've covered quite a bit of ground, and it's difficult to do that in an hour. So give us a summary of what you want people to take away with. And if you would, one of the things I wanted to ask you to leave people with is, what is one step they can take to start becoming more mindful in their life every day? Just something easy that they could do.
Yeah. I like people to understand that the world is struggling. People are experiencing a lot of disturbances within, and more people than we realize. And it's not that we're good at hiding, we're really bad at observing. And I want people to walk away understanding that it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to carry it around for the rest of your life, and the mind can be healed and it can be restored, and it is challenging. And it is possible. And one thing practically that we can start to do that will start helping is to look within. Instead of judging, look within with curiosity and understanding. What am I feeling? Why am I feeling that way? And understand that we all have the power of how we are experiencing it. And if it feels like you don't, it's because that power has been deferred and it's there to be reclaimed.
Really nice. Thank you so much, Nicholas. I want to actually sort of summarize those comments, and I'll do that and maybe put that in the stream and the feed for the show. In the meantime, how can people connect with you to learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so my website is beingoneworld.com, and my name, Nicholas C. Clay, is anywhere as you look, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. Being One World has a LinkedIn page, an Instagram page, a Facebook page. So if you either go by the business name or my name, I'm one of the easiest people to find and connect with. And I would love to connect with people, whether coaching, not coaching, whether you're looking for a book recommendation. I write weekly mindfulness articles. I have a blog. I started building a YouTube page, which I look forward to putting this video on as well. I'm here to serve the best I can. And if you're looking for the highest value, then I'm here to work with you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Nicholas. This has been an amazing show. You've given us a lot to consider and think about. So Mom said, wow, Nicholas, you brought out some of my favorite reactions from Ross.
And she had me too. I looked at her and her face was really touching.
Oh, it's classic. It is classic. So she said she loves the various perspectives. And Andy says, brilliant. Well, I've just had an amazing time today. And, you know, as I wrap things up, my last drop is, if we don't want to be at the mercy of our whirlwind that's happening around us, that's called life and workplace chaos and all of that, we've got to practice getting to a place where we find that inner peace. I know there are toxic workplaces, blah, 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 all of that. It's in my brain. Yes. And you can still get to that place of inner peace. And my real takeaway for today is that we've got to let go. We've got to release. We've got to get to nothing and be willing to be in the moment. And that's not an easy thing for us to do. So it's going to take practice. Everyone out there, thank you so much for tuning in. You have been amazing. We love having you here. Don't forget to join us next week, same time, same station, for my co-host and my guest. I will see you all at the debrief. And for everyone else out there, tune in next week for another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. We'll see you next Thursday.